It is Wednesday, August the 17th, 2016. My name is Kathy Kramer. I am a member of First Unitarian Church, and I'm here today with Richard and Joan Beal, conducting an oral history. And in Scarborough, Maine. Not far from where you all live. Okay, so I'm going to ask you some questions. So why don't we start talking, just give a little background about you all and your personal stories. So which one of you would like to start with your background?
You want me to start? Okay. I was born in Paterson, New Jersey. My maiden name was Schumacher. My father was an immigrant from Germany when he was about 10. So I'm sort of first-generation American. Had a pretty typical childhood in suburban New York with three other siblings. Went to college, went to Wellesley College. A little bit of sort of some of this feeling of the American dream. My family did well. Went to Wellesley College, met Richard, my husband, at a camp for emotionally disturbed children, where we always say we were the counselors. And after some time, got married, moved to Maine, got involved with sort of child care activities, organized a children's group home, worked in a psychiatric halfway house together, managed that, at which point we both knew we needed some other careers, and he had been considering the ministry for a while, so he went to Harvard Divinity School. I went to Wellesley College of Education, got my teaching degree, and then eventually he made his way through Harvard Divinity. We went into various churches, one in Maine, one in Massachusetts, and then landed at Louisville, Kentucky, where we spent, he spent 15 years, and I spent 22.
Oddly. Two in Maine.
Two churches in Maine.
Dexter and Sangerville.
Yes, right. Okay. Okay, and that takes us up to Kentucky.
Okay, very good.
So, and that covers, were you born in Louisville, my education, my family.
Mm-hmm.
We have one son, Barney, who was born in 1973, and he went through a good chunk of his time in Maine and Massachusetts school systems, and then when we moved to Maine, he was in the eighth grade. So we did raise him from eighth grade to 12th grade in Maine. He went to DuPont Manual and enjoyed his time.
You mean
in Louisville.
Yeah. Kentucky, not Maine.
Yeah. Right. Okay, in Louisville. Right.
Good.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And he was very involved in church stuff too. He had some of his best friends were in the church. When he went to his junior prom, it was with somebody that was in the church. It wasn't a big romantic thing, but all of his friends were. He had friends at Manual too, but he had strong relationships inside the church RE program.
Mm-hmm.
And he also did district district youth stuff. So mm-hmm. the church and Unitarian Universalism was really important to him in his teenage years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll keep going, moving my way down these questions.
Okay.
I participated in lots of church activities, so I will kind of wait till we get down to that second set if you want.
Sure, that's fine.
And the church was really an important part of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Richard's obviously, but also mine and our son Barney's.
Mm-hmm.
First memory of the church, of course, that's not like, it's not a way back memory because I was 38 when we moved to Louisville. Of course, my first memory of the church was a burned-out building.
That was the first time you all saw the church?
Yes.
It was already burned.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, no, you wouldn't have seen it before me either.
Yeah.
So the first memory of the church as a community would have been in Marion Hall.
Yeah.
When we came
Spalding.
Spalding. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As well as all of these various groups of people that when you candidate for a church in those days, mm-hmm. You candidated and your spouse showed up too, and you went to the women's group meeting and meetings at people's houses and the
Arif,
and so everybody meets you.
And had tea at important people's houses.
Yeah, tea at important people's houses. Yeah, that must have been, I remember Catherine Kerwin telling the story at the event we had for when you retired, and she got up and gave a beautiful speech or reflection, and we were relatively new, we were new members, and I remember her saying how there were maybe three possible candidates, and at least one backed out when the church burned. They didn't want to deal with it or something, and these are my words, but she said that you said you wanted the job even more because it was such a challenge, and that's what you were looking for.
If I can add, it wasn't so much that it was a challenge, although it was. It was because when I first sort of found out about the church, everything was moving along. This, that, the next thing, in order, everything seemed pretty good. There wasn't a lot to do there except continue what had been done before.
Yeah.
That wasn't exciting. Mm-hmm. But the fire changed that.
Oh, so you were interested, you weren't necessarily attracted to the church because it was orderly and it was going to be an easy...
Quite the opposite.
So you were a candidate before the fire, actually?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a call from George Schumann.
Oh, yeah.
Said, all those pictures of the church in the in the book we sent you about the church?
Yeah.
Disregard those.
Oh my gosh.
And that was something we were kind of surprised about, because we expected that the church was going to want a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
That they would want somebody mm-hmm. whose specialty was building and raising money.
Right.
But they were very clear, I'm kind of saying more of your part now, but this is something we've talked about, that they were very clear that what they wanted somebody to be the minister, and that the fundraising they saw as their responsibility.
Right.
So
I did ask somebody about that. I asked Joanne about that. I said, how did the church work? And in so many words, she said it was like two separate spheres. Those are my words.
Mm-hmm.
There was the building, but there was also the business of the church work was very important.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's that was just amazing. So what you're saying is you can't recall the interior or the exterior of the church.
Just from pictures.
We do, however, remember, I mean, the building was all closed up, but the steeple, and you may have this information, the steeple was still standing.
Yeah.
But we remember the first Easter at the church, that we spent at the church, the whole steeple crashed to the ground right after the Easter service. I mean, we were all in Marion Hall, and when we came, you don't remember that. The steeple crashed down into the
top. Oh, the steeple.
Yeah,
the tower.
Right.
Okay.
So this was not, how much longer was this after the fire?
It would have been about a year or so. Yeah. I mean, it had been braced up, but I guess there had been some weakening in the foundation and the steeple fell during. That's my recollection. You could ask somebody like Claudia, but she probably would remember.
But they also had to take down several courses of the stonework because they were afraid that it was going to collapse and maybe fall on somebody walking along the sidewalk.
Yeah. There are pictures of kids painting on temporary wall structures.
Right.
Yeah, you were making it pretty or something. Yeah. What would you say, what was the candidating like?
Well, having been at a number of different churches now, I am aware that it was pretty standard for that time. What I remember particularly was that, other than being at Madeline Leffler's for tea, I went down to Louisville without having finished a sermon. And then it was very busy. So when they were taking me down to Lexington to do the
pre-candidate,
yeah, the preaching, a neutral pulpit, they were all sitting there in the car while I was still writing my sermon. And I thought, oh, I should have done this beforehand. But they seemed all right with that.
Isn't that something? And so the candidate, all of the meetings and the sermons and everything were done in other buildings because there was no church building for you to... do the work required to apply for the position. And so you met in people's homes a lot, and you met at like wherever, like I knew Spalding had donated,
Marion Hall,
offered. How long were you how long did you all meet in Marion Hall?
It was at least a year, maybe more.
A year?
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I think the church had been meeting there for a year before we got there, and then that was a year.
Okay.
About a year that we were there, and then the decision was made to go to the West End and rent the building in the West End.
Right, yeah. Right. So were you involved, you were also working, were you teaching then?
I was teaching in Maine and got, I mean, in those days, people, it sounds like so long ago, but in many ways it was.
It's changed so much.
Yeah, I mean, they expected spouses to show up, and I think a lot of places still do, and kids to show up. So I was teaching, got some time off from teaching, and arranged it with, you know, to overlap a little bit with a school vacation. And so we all flew down for that and stayed somewhere for that week. And the church really did it. It was a very, considering that they had a burnt out building, it was a very organized process. There were lots of meetings with lots of different groups, and people were very welcoming, and you know, they arranged pizza parties for Barney, and I remember Bill Sibley asked him what he wanted to do, and he wanted to see the Louisville Zoo, so Bill Sibley took him and some other kids to the zoo, and you know, they just made sure. People took me off on special things. We actually bought our house. We got down there and we bought our house in 1 week. You know, we needed to have a house. So all of this is going on, and we're going around with a realtor to purchase a house, and we found a house. And
pretty much less than a week because we couldn't close on anything until the vote by the congregation whether to call us.
Yeah. So it was, you know, they really... Whoever the search committee really organized this very well.
So where did you live in Louisville? Where was your first house? Did you always live on Hepburn?
On Highland.
Highland. That's right. So you always lived
there. That's where we moved into.
Okay. All right. So what you had was the church being rebuilt, candidating, and also and were you planning to teach
when you
arrived?
Yeah, and that was just another thing that they did really nicely. Catherine Kerwin made sure that I had an interview at Van Hoos, and I'm sure that she said really nice things about me to somebody. And so I knew before I went down there that I had a job, and it turned out I worked exactly the same job that Jean Reed had earlier in her career. But anyway, it was, people did well by us.
That's good.
Yeah.
What was it like being at the West End Church?
Getting to the West End Church was somewhat interesting. I had developed something of a relationship with the minister at, what is it, Dan?
Plymouth.
Congregational church, a black church in the West End. And he let me know that they had this other building that had come their way, I guess because nobody else wanted it, and that maybe we would be interested in it. Mm-hmm. So I proposed moving to the West End, and people did not immediately jump to their feet applauding.
Mm-hmm.
There are quite a few people who did not want to go to the West End.
Right.
It was dangerous. It was too far away for them to drive from the East End. We would never pick up any of the local people, blah, blah, blah. So that was a little bit touchy. It was not too antagonistic per se, but it was a touchy question as to whether or not we would move to the West End. And we actually looked at a place in
Brown Hotel.
It was either Brown Hotel or the
St.
building.
Francis?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly. But I loved being in the West End, partly because it gave me a lot of credit with the black community.
Mm-hmm.
We were the first white church to move into the West End in however many centuries.
Probably. Yeah.
And the church was active. I think people, by the time we left, people really had enjoyed that church.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we had suppers there. We had yard sales there. We had, you know, it was, they made some effort to recruit new members, not very successful, but, you know, went door to door, talked to people, that sort of thing.
And you had, how long were you there, approximately?
2 years.
2 years. Okay, so you, and meanwhile, while this is going on, you're still rebuilding and you're still conducting the work of the church and moving at the same time into temporary quarters.
The church office was in the West End at that point.
You had to
move to the West End.
Sorry, everything, yeah.
Yeah. So where were you before, or so was Ari and the offices, were they at Marion Hall?
They were at Haywood House.
Oh, that's right, because Haywood didn't burn.
Right. And they tossed out all the social justice groups that they had been either giving the space to or renting it very reasonably because they needed this space.
They needed the space. I had heard somewhere that the ACLU was there for a while.
Yep.
Susie Post was there.
The help office.
The help office
was there.
So interesting that the help office is back at church now, which is nice.
Yeah.
And that's so the offices, and your study moved to your office. It had to move from Haywood to
the West End.
That's right. So you can, and the RE programs kept moving right along. Now, Ann Miller, was she the RE director when you first came to church? Had she already been?
Absolutely. No question that she was the RE director.
Yeah, she was there for a long time. And yeah, so.
At least 20 years.
Yeah, 20, 25 years. Yeah. What did you, do you think the fire, I don't know how to say this. Do you think the fire sort of reshaped your perspective?
Rekindled has to be the word.
No, I'm talking about reshaped. Reshaped your perspective on what you thought you were going to be doing when before you even heard about the church. I mean, you were going to be a minister. You'd already, how many churches had you already been a minister?
Only, you know, your practice churches,
your intern churches.
And then just these two very small rural churches in Maine.
So this was your first big, it was considered big.
Right.
So that was, what kind of perspective did you, or what kind of idea that you had in your head that it was going to be like to be a minister at a big church? Or did you not just not have one?
I basically didn't have one. Why pre-plan something on no basis whatsoever?
Right.
So I didn't.
Yeah. Do you think that you enjoyed being a minister of a bigger church and a smaller church at the same time? You liked them both for different reasons?
Yes. And actually in Maine I had these two small churches that were linked.
Oh.
So I would do two services every Sunday, two board of trustees, two religious education, two...
Really?
Taking out the garbage if nobody remembers.
Yeah. So you sort of had a big church anyway. You had a different kind of big church in terms of governance and the activities and everything.
Right.
So you just had it all under one new roof. And that's something. Now what about, Joan, we had talked about a little bit about the women at First U. What do you recall about the women that you met there when you first moved there?
When we first of all, some of the people that were in particular reached out to me would have been like Jan Calvert, Judy Lanning, Phoebe, people who were on the search committee. They really they made a big effort to include me and families. And Nell and Brigham, I mean, people were very, very kind. And the kindness and warmth were what I related to first. But as I imagine you know, the people were so kind of competent stellar and had such a great sense of what this church institution meant for people and, you know, how group dynamics, how things could be run, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That it was, I remember all of those people and just had a kind of confidence about life that was very strong. I remember, this is just, I remember Beverly Moore in particular. I wasn't friends with her right away, but during a service auction, I bought a canoe trip that John Nader and David Leedy had sold at the service auction. This was before I was doing the canoe trips. And I had David Leedy's fishing pole, and we were way back in the Blue River. Bev and I were in the same boat, and I dropped David Leedy's fishing pole in the Blue River, and I thought, oh no, I've got to get this fishing pole out. So I just took my clothes off down to my underwear and started diving in the water looking for David Leedy's fishing pole. And Beverly was saying, what are you doing? What's going on? I said, I've got to find this fishing pole. And she said, well, I'll help you. And she just took off her clothes and looking for the fishing pole. And that was definitely Beverly Moore, but it was all, that's kind of the way I think of Louisville. People really all pitched in their own way at different times.
Mm-hmm.
So. But they also knew that given they had two innocents from rural Maine, they better be front and center that we survive.
Was this your first...
Wait a minute, did you find the fishing pole?
I never found it. And when I told David, he said, that was just like an old fishing pole. I didn't even care about it.
Was this your first visit to the South or... extended visit to the South when you moved to Louisville?
I hitchhiked through it before.
But, oh, you did?
Yes, I had no Southern experience. And I actually went there with a certain amount of Yankee prejudice.
Really?
Yes.
Probably that had something to do with the difference in intelligence?
Only in Eastern Kentucky.
Yeah, that's right. So then you met up with your attitude quickly evaporated once you met the likes of Nell McLaughlin and Phoebe Gibson and people like that. Keep on naming women. I got to name some men here.
But that's Eric.
Eric. Oh, Eric Tackow. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And when we were talking about these questions, I mean, I'm going to quote from you. It was a lot of the women that you named, and he said, I was really kind of scared of them.
Right. Well, the photo I got, they were looking so formidable.
The photo that was in the packet for the from the search committee.
Yeah. And then they had all these southern accents. You knew that Nell was from Georgia.
Oh, it was wonderful. Her accent. I have to ask about, if you don't mind, this is a digression. Can you tell me about the hitchhiking, your hitchhiking trip? When was that?
Oh, I hitchhiked back and forth across the country several times.
You did?
Including from Goddard College with my roommate to Mexico City, and then up to Palo Alto.
Wow.
I crossed the country a number of times, including with another friend down through into New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of stories.
Lots of stories. Oh my gosh. So back to the role of women, just one more question. Was the Women's Alliance meeting when you joined or came?
Mm-hmm. There had been two alliances at some point. When the church was very big, there were two alliances. It was an evening alliance and a day alliance. The day alliance being the more old-time alliance when not so many women were working, and it was highly organized and very self-sufficient. And then the evening alliance was one that had come in as more people began to work outside of their homes.
Mm-hmm.
But the old alliance was working when we came in, and they did things. I mean, I'm much more sympathetic to it now, and they were certainly very active in their earlier time, but they had a lot of speakers coming in, and they did a lot of trips and things. And at that point in my life, I was interested in issues, so there was another women's group formed where we read books, we did some activities, and really what it sounds like the current alliance is like is a mixture of all of those things.
Right.
A lot of activities, some educational, some speakers, some self-education, and social justice.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't really a tension, but it was tended to be the younger women that were in this book discussion group, and we did some services and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you came across that. We did an alliance service somewhere along the way. I don't know if you've come across it, but where we took a whole bunch of the older members of the alliance and we had lunch with them, and we put a tape recorder on the table, and we just asked them for stories.
No.
And then we did a service about that, and each of us, there were maybe eight of us doing the service, we each took a decade, like 1900 to 1910.
Really?
And some of the things we learned, we just did some little skit. So some people just read minutes from the meetings, and some people did pretend conversations, taking on the roles of various people who were in the alliance at that time.
I think I've seen pictures of that.
We have to be a little careful of time.
Yes, you're right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
Can you, before we leave, can you tell me recall some of the women that helped you with that service?
Oh, gosh. Mary Ballard, Kathy Zachary,
okay.
I don't know what Claudia did.
Well, I can start with those because maybe we can get some more
Judy
information.
Lanning, I think.
No, Judy Lanning wasn't in the church anymore at that point. I'm trying to think. Joanne Johnson was still there around. Susan Wilburn might remember it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of social justice issues, can you recall any of the controversial events in Louisville when you all were living there? Any of them come to mind? Let's see, you were there from 85 to 99?
2001.
Yeah, so.
There was still a somewhat active Ku Klux Klan that, and with other Klan members coming from outside of Louisville to hold rallies. I remember being with a couple people from the church when the Klan was threatening to burn down the house of a black family that had moved somewhere in Shively.
Fairness campaign was a big one.
Oh, Fairness, yeah, the Fairness campaign.
That really grew when I first went there. I think they had already had one pride parade, but there had not been a single minister who was willing to be out as even supportive,
really,
much less being gay. So I was the first person minister to speak at one of the pride parades.
Was it either at Central Park, or was it on the steps of the courthouse, or in some other place?
If I remember correctly, I think it was down on the waterfront.
On the waterfront.
Riverfront.
Okay, riverfront.
Yeah.
But I think it was the steps of what I remember is the steps of the courthouse, but I may be wrong.
Or City Hall.
Yeah. Oh, we could both be wrong.
Yes, let's
be fair about that.
Yeah.
That reminds me, we have that photograph of you and Jan Phillips and Lewis Coleman hanging in the library. Can you recall any of the planning? How did that happen?
That was my idea.
Was it?
It was.
From the Penn Dennis Club, right.
Yep, and partly because we just knew that it was close to all minorities, really, at that point.
Yeah, it was.
I think I started talking with doing something like that. Partly every once in a while I could be a news hound.
You have to be, you're a lot of work.
So I talked initially with Jan Phillips about it and invited Lewis. So it was Jan and Lewis at the table, and I was being the waiter.
You were the waiter, because you were the white guy.
And brought the brought plates and stuff like that from
there's
the church.
Oh, the church plate. Tablecloth.
I didn't use to ask permission for those things.
Yeah.
I would just, is what I need, so I would take it off.
And you all managed to get the press there for it?
Yeah, that was not hard when we told them what we were going to do.
Okay.
They were very anxious to be there. Because it was potentially highly disruptive to the Penn Dennis membership.
Yeah.
Which was quite self-satisfying.
I think they were at that time beginning to wrestle with the discrimination in against blacks and women. And for some reason I recall the Penn Dennis was in the middle of all that, you know. So, well, they found it because of who they were and everything. Well, that picture is priceless. Whenever we show anybody at the library, we say, no, this is, you know, what?
What year would that have been?
That was early.
That was still early.
I think, in the West End. Maybe not. But.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
It might have been the early 90s.
Took the plates from the new kitchen.
Now, were there any, can you recall any particular controversies at church?
Well, later, of course, there was polyamory.
Yes.
And
Terry Borney.
Up to a point, Terry Borney. Do you remember Terry Borney?
I never met him, but
he was a music person.
Yeah, I'd heard about it. What was that about?
Well, Terry could be kind of short and dismissive.
Right.
And I came in at a point when there were a couple of, a black couple that was there to talk to me about a wedding at the church. And Terry was just, he just didn't come across in any way, shape, or manner as welcoming. It was dismissive. It was arrogant. And I, on the basis of that, I fired him.
You fired him?
What was his job at the church?
Oh, he was the music person.
But Richard, I'm going to interrupt here because I also, that you might have, but he resigned regularly.
That sounds like
true. He quit regularly, and he was always, people always made an effort to get him back, you know, and I think the last, I may be wrong, but I don't remember that you may have wanted to fire him, but he quit, and that was the one time, he quit because somebody complained about practicing or something, and you just didn't make any effort to get him back.
No, I don't remember it that way. Okay. I think that he and I had words about the way he had acted. And he had supporters in the church.
Yeah, there were
Rose Izetti, for example.
Yeah.
Eventually, we had a, a congregational meeting.
Wow. About that.
But I felt, obviously, I felt strongly about that.
Now, the issue with the polyamory controversy was, it sort of grew out of a desire to allow the group to be visible in its printed publications and its and in the public, in the general public, and it seems like that's what I recall. That's how it started, and then it just grew.
It wasn't supposed initially to be per se linked with the church,
right?
But there were several people involved in the polyamory movement who started coming to the church,
right?
And from my point of view, I think they decided that this was an opportunity to become known and to advance the cause, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And that did not sit well with everybody.
Right.
So I saw my job as keeping the lid on things.
Right.
And I still think that was probably the right thing to do, although over time it didn't work out all that well, because by the time I left, it was fairly antagonistic.
And that's what I think about, do ministers, when somebody wants to, they go to a seminary, do they teach you how to balance the challenges of running a church and with the mission of a Unitarian Universalist church that's kind of out there, you know, so that's part of their, that's what they're supposed to do. Do they teach you how to balance that?
No.
No.
Not then. Not then.
Yeah.
Nor did they teach you how to about how to relate to boards or finances or public relations. They did theology. And that's changed drastically since I went to divinity school.
How did it change? How did that come about, the change?
We realized the denomination, the association really, figured out that we were losing congregations and losing membership because these things were not being handled well. And so put in at headquarters resource people who began to get help within in the districts, et cetera, et cetera. A change was needed, and finally people saw it and moved in that direction. For a while, I was the what they call the good offices person in the old Ohio Valley district, and my job was to go where there were difficulties between ministers and congregations or groups within a congregation, I was to go and advocate for the minister. And somebody from the district came to advocate for the congregation and get people together and see if we could work things out amicably, which occasionally happened, and occasionally there was a daily agreeable separation.
Another controversy or social justice issue that the UUs took up was the issue of gay rights. Now that was all, when you came to the church, that had already begun being addressed. My Bob Reed provided support, but I remember that when we joined in 96, that was, it seems like that had been going on for a long time, that social justice issue on behalf of LGBTQ people was already in place. And that's one thing that I admired about the church, was that they were so far ahead of so many other, continues to be so far ahead of so many other churches.
When I went there, there were a couple of people who had come out in the congregation, and the church was realizing that it was generally willing and able to advocate for LGBTQ, blah blah blah, and. That was really one of the things that I feel best about my ministry, because I worked very hard at opening things up. I was close to the Fairness Campaign. I was one of the organizers of Religious Leaders for Fairness. I was an unofficial chaplain to the Kentucky Belles.
Now, who were they?
They were a group of guys who liked to get together as women.
At the
church.
Is that right?
Yeah. And let's see.
You were a public face too. I mean, you wrote letters, and there were a lot of events that where you were, appeared on their behalf.
I did some services
at the
lots
church.
Of union service before marriage was allowed. It was he and Elwood, but at that point probably more Richard were the main ministers who were doing union services for people who wanted to get married.
Another thing that I'm proud of was that when black women wanted to get married, I was the person who was recommended to them by other lesbians.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of those kinds of unions. I always call them marriages, although legally they weren't that, but I did that for including the daughter of one of the black Baptist ministers.
It all mattered, doesn't it? All of that mattered, you know, of those very, which led to so many major changes. It all mattered. And so there were different issues that it seems like a UU minister and a congregation have to wrestle with over time. It doesn't come easy, does it?
I felt lucky because Louisville really was a liberal church. When liberal was still a fairly decent word, it wasn't act the way it is now. Mm-hmm. So while there were always people who didn't approve of this or that, the congregation, as a congregation, was very supportive mm-hmm. of those social justice mm-hmm. Endeavors.
Mm-hmm. And so sometimes with some of these issues, you had to have congregational meetings, and then sometimes you didn't have congregational meetings. You and others and church members just went out and did it, and somehow it was associated with what they did was associated with the church, the First Unitarian.
We couldn't say we're representing First Unitarian, but we could say we're members of First Unitarian.
Yeah, well, like your letters to the editor, you signed it, Reverend Richard Beale, but the way you phrased it, you were not representing the church.
Right.
Yeah, which was really important. But it was because you were out there doing that kind of work.
But in general, I had maybe I've said this already, but I had good relationships with the Black community.
Mm-hmm.
The Rainbow Coalition had its big meeting in Louisville at the church.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Hmm.
Was Jesse Jackson there?
No.
Okay. I remember him speaking at a Memorial Auditorium when he was running for president.
Yeah, and he was there I met him several times because of, like, he'd come for the funeral of some prominent minister.
Mm-hmm. That was very, very important to do that. It was very important to do that.
Oh, yeah, I was, again, I'm bragging.
Go ahead.
But,
well deserved.
I joined, and for a time, was the only white member of the Interdenominational Ministerial Coalition, which was the Black Ministers
mm-hmm.
group.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, and eventually I got some people in the church to mm-hmm. go to the Emancipation Day mm-hmm. services, mm-hmm. which were big in the Black community at that time. What did you just...
I said NAACP.
I was the secretary of the local branch of the NAACP.
Mm-hmm.
And again, would frequently be the only white guy in the place.
Yeah, and that was in the 80s and, into the 90s.
Mm-hmm. In the 90s, mm-hmm. 90s, I think the NAACP being that active was later in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we should throw in Al Rosen's name in some of this too, because he was one of the church members who was very strong in that with Richard, and was like Emancipation Day. Al often went to Emancipation Day services and had a relationship with people in the Black mm-hmm. community from when he was the owner of Joe's Palm Room. And he
really owned Joe's Palm Room at one point.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that right?
Right.
Oh my, let's see. I was just talking to somebody the other day about that, Joe's Palm Room.
Mm-hmm.
Now he was a radical fellow coming out of New York when politics were more radicalized in New York. And so he was, I thought Al was on the right side of every issue.
Yeah. Oh, I remember him. And he was active in the local organization. Well, it was a national organization, but they were the local people mm-hmm. that tried to address the issue of Israeli-Palestinian relations.
The two-state solution.
That's right.
Somewhat. He was somewhat involved in that. Ira Gruper, who was not a member of the church, who was the motivating force behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And Susie Post was a supporter.
Yeah, right. I remember that. Okay, so here you are. You moved these two novices from Maine, moving to the city of Louisville in the South, and you were there for how many years?
15. She was there 20.
I was there 22. He was there 15 at First Unitarian. Then when he came back from New Zealand, he was there for 2 more years
right.
out at TJ as the RE director.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that when you left TJ, you moved back to Maine.
You moved to Detroit.
No, I became an interim minister for a while.
In Detroit?
Just outside of Detroit.
Okay. And then you stayed.
Right.
Because
so
you
that
were
I
teaching.
Could finish up my years for my
retirement.
Teacher retirement. Yeah.
Right. Okay. What would you say these are the questions you always ask, is the strengths, looking back, what were the strengths and the weaknesses of First Unitarian? Mm-hmm.
It was not a great pledging congregation.
Still isn't.
It never had been.
Yeah.
They just somehow, at one point, the board of trustees, the members of the board, would just, out of their own pocket, make up whatever was missing for the
really?
Budget.
Yeah.
That was a really old-fashioned way of doing things.
Yeah.
So there were things that we couldn't do
mm-hmm.
Because of that. We just didn't have always the wherewithal.
Right.
But we did pretty well, even so.
Mm-hmm.
And there were still, when I went there, still a few quite wealthy members
mm-hmm.
of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them wound up leaving the church a fair amount of money,
mm-hmm.
which helped us going, keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Tackow was also a sort of very, he was a kind of brilliant guy in
yeah.
his own way. He was he's a descendant of Justice Brandeis?
Yeah.
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 And his wife, Mary Tackow. Anyway, that I think of as a weakness, and the fact that although when I went there, the membership figures were not accurate.
Oh.
They were kind of inflated.
Mm-hmm.
And so we cut that down,
mm-hmm.
partly to save money, because we didn't owe the denomination that much
right.
per head, because we didn't have the heads.
Yeah.
But and then we did grow some. I think it was 360 when I was the official numbers when I went there.
Mm-hmm.
And by after a fair amount of work and some focus, we got it up to 320.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't stay that
mm-hmm.
That populous
mm-hmm.
For very long.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was part because it was a conservative state.
Mm-hmm.
And it would. First Unitarian was quote unquote ahead of its time
mm-hmm.
In terms of lots of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody was comfortable in coming to a church so identified.
Yeah. So would you call that a strength?
No.
You would call it a weakness?
Because we didn't do anything to compensate for that per se.
Oh, I see.
We did not have we didn't bribe the membership committee, you know, money under the table to be very active. You know.
Right.
I'm going to jump in here because having been in a number of churches, in terms of strengths, Richard, they are one of the hardest working churches that
really?
I've ever seen.
I wouldn't argue
yeah.
with that.
Yeah, I mean, they,
yeah.
people do. You didn't always get everybody on board, but people did what they said they were going to do, and
mm-hmm.
they worked hard and had ideas. And I never got the feeling that ideas got squashed there. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's some churches where somebody comes up with something new,
mm-hmm.
and oh no, we've never done it that
oh,
way.
Oh yeah, yeah. Churches that say
yeah,
that, yeah
they really do.
Way.
And it always surprised me when I hear that because that was not my experience at First U. That people were more than willing to try
mm-hmm.
something new out, don't you think? Is that
A good example of that was food fair.
Yeah.
We needed to raise some money for just ordinary operating expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think it was a great idea, mm-hmm. but it was a great amount of work.
And that was your idea, right?
Yeah. And it did very well,
mm-hmm.
you know, $5,000-$7,000 a year we
mm-hmm.
would raise.
Mm-hmm. And it had the big meal, and then all of the different committees made different things to sell at their booths.
Right.
And even the kids were involved, and they waited on the tables, and they made cookies and things like that. Yeah, I remember that.
It was
It was so pretty. I mean, the church is beautiful.
Mm. Yeah, it is. That's a strength, too.
I know,
yeah,
it is. Right. It's just incredible. It really is.
That was well publicized.
And it was well publicized.
Which makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. There were pictures in the paper.
Oh, yeah.
That, and there were ads in the paper.
That was all that hard work by people, too. I mean, Catherine Kerwin always had her fingers when she was dealing with that,
right.
You know.
She was the
publicity. Yeah, and then the cooks, Tiffany, all these
expert.
People just worked. It was very labor intensive. But
I remember seeing a letter. That she's writing to someone at the Courier Journal about an event, and she says, "Now this is," and she's saying it much better than I am, but now this is something that you might be interested in because of this and that. And cordially, Catherine. That cordially just slays me. And, you know, you just had feelings saying somebody's reading, saying, "Okay, we're covering that." You know,
Were you there when we did the cabaret?
No, I missed the cabaret.
That was
yeah, that was the there's we have a lot of material about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And our pictures of all the ladies dressed up in cocktail dresses and
so the cabaret was a fundraising event?
Yes, what was it?
Yeah,
it
was more an internal fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
The food fair was aimed at people from outside the church to raise money from the community.
Right.
The cabaret was more the folks inside the church.
Well,
but we had a band that had used the church for practice and various
mm-hmm.
things and were willing to do something for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we asked about their doing, in effect, a cabaret that would be based on Casablanca.
Yeah. The men had on suits and ties.
Yeah.
And there were, it was, there was food and there was, wasn't there gambling or some sort of
yes,
game?
Yes, Jane Miller did a sideline of gambling.
Right.
Yeah.
In the back room. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, and he made some money.
Yeah.
He made some money
off
of it. Yeah. Now, and there was also, now were the courtyard cafes, were they
yes,
during?
Yes, that's true too. I forgot about the courtyard cafes.
Yeah, now they were, what were they all about?
They were, they went through they morphed into various things, but it was basically music, entertainment, colored lights in the courtyard, and food, and people brought, it was desserts, food, and I remember Stephanie White and Terry played with their group at one of them, and people just sat and talked. They were social events that people paid money for, and that raised some money on that.
It wasn't primarily a money raiser.
Yeah, it was
we
meant
had
to be.
No,
but
well, it
wasn't a big money.
But it was, well, that was the thing about the churches is that I've noticed is that it's not just the fundraising, it's also the gathering and the friendship,
mm-hmm.
and the which to me it seems like reading all the papers from the fire, that was the friendships and the communication was the byproduct of all that hard work.
Yeah.
Because people met a lot and they became friends. And
right.
I remember when we first started going there, the social hall was packed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of intimidated, you know, I'm not going in there, but it was, and I think what it was, that was in 96, so it was just 6 or 7 years after the after the dedication.
Right.
And so people were still mm-hmm. congregating in coffee hour afterwards. I mean, it was crowded.
Yeah.
And I'll just say this because I can. I remember when our NOW meetings met
yes,
there.
Yes, right.
And then I was, one night I was in charge of something and I was gonna tape something on a wall in the social hall.
Mm-hmm.
And you just came up and I didn't know you that well, but you said, you know, maybe you'd better not do that. And I later realized all of the sweat equity and the emotions that you all went through to build the church, you didn't want anything messed up. So I didn't know it at the time. I thought, okay, I didn't think anything of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very, very strong. And the NOW meetings, we met there we met there for about 8 years. And I remember the Nancy Rankin loved Marge Warden
mm.
because Marge was so accessible and reliable and efficient with
yeah.
the key and getting the money. And Marge liked Nancy because
mm-hmm.
Nancy, we always paid our dues and she didn't have to chase us down.
Right.
Yeah.
And you also, Marge always said that the church never looked as good when any group left it as it did after the NOW people left it.
Oh, we were very careful to put all the tables back
yes.
the way they were.
Right.
Yeah. I will pass that on to Nancy.
Yeah.
It wasn't only NOW, but another important social action was the support for Planned Parenthood.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that was, let's see, I think the protest outside of the, not Planned Parenthood, but
yes.
the clinics, the
right.
abortion clinics,
right.
that started in 86. And so...
A lot of our individual members.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Knows.
Oh,
yeah.
And you were.
Oh, yeah. I protested.
You escorted that.
I escorted at the one down on Broadway.
Broadway.
Yeah.
And Sally and Steve Spiro, who left pretty soon after they moved away. Pretty soon after we came, but they were very big organizers of those.
Uh-huh.
Of the
really
Steven Spiro actually and Carol Finley
uh-huh.
Organized a lot of the escorts, and then there was the whole other one on Market Street.
Right.
But and then, of course, RCRC was
uh-huh.
sort of in there as well. But it was the people in the church really pitched in on that.
That really,
yeah.
That's what I recall because I escorted at the EMW,
right?
And we looked at the one that you went. Let's see. Now that was
Bongiovanni's,
yeah.
Out.
And it wasn't called EMW. I forgot the name.
I don't even remember.
Yeah,
either.
But we thought of you all as the religious.
Oh.
yeah.
Some
because
the people,
there were so many people from First Youth
yes,
there.
Yes, they were.
But
right.
some of the people there would have been upset if
yeah,
they
I know.
Described
we just said it
in such
ourselves.
A way.
Yeah. Well, then some of the people in our group were upset that they thought they were being religious, but you know, so there were
yeah.
these inner, you know, soap opera stuff going on. Yeah, yeah, that was.
And then all the Roe v. Wade dinners, there were a number of them at the church.
Here. Right.
Yeah.
yeah.
Right. I remember those. And opened up the wall and filled
mm-hmm.
in the whole room, and it was nice with the tables and the tablecloths
right.
and the speakers and the music and.
Yeah, and that's just one of those things where I don't know if it, I'm not even sure it would work that way anymore. But you know, because I was involved in RCRC, and I would just sort of say we're having this dinner and we need people to stay and help set up the set tables, wash dishes,
yeah.
and people in the church would just come
do
out
it.
And do it.
Yeah.
I mean, they would be there. They'd stay after the service. They'd set up all the tables. They'd put tablecloths on. It was and stay and wash dishes. It was
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
you asked, and people would, you know, do it. Just do it.
It was, and they were very dressy events.
Yes,
as
yeah.
I recall.
Right.
And I think that First Unitarian kind of laid the groundwork for other churches later on hosting it,
mm-hmm.
because
yeah.
there was a lot of resistance. There was concern from
right.
other churches to just host.
Right.
What would
right.
their members think?
Right.
Their members think.
I
yeah.
remember going to one of them. I think it was Crescent Hill Baptist.
Yes,
yeah,
so
there
was one at
oh.
Crescent Hill Baptist.
Yeah.
Right
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Talking about the doors being open between the sanctuary and the social hall. One of the things, I don't know if the church still does it to the same extent, but I always thought that the Christmas Eve services were set up so well. Candles and flowers and
still the same.
Ritual and magnificent spread using the Taft silver.
That was my first volunteer job was to pour punch at Vespers. And I was just stunned by that long table with white tablecloths and the tea service now.
Yeah, that's the Taft silver.
Why is it called Taft?
Because it belonged to the Taft family. What's Taft's full name?
I don't know. Not William
Were these
Howard?
Churchmen?
Yes, William Howard.
Not the Taft of Ohio.
Yes. Oh. He was...
Really?
He was a Unitarian. He was the president of the United States. And...
William Howard Taft.
Yeah. Oh,
all right.
He was not, in every case, the most admirable person in the world, but in some ways he is pretty good. He and Roosevelt were allied for a long time before
really?
They broke up.
And somehow you managed to get the tea set.
Kay
Woodworth
somehow had gotten her hands on it and gave it to the church.
I'll be darned. Isn't that something? It was beautiful. It was sat in the middle, and the candles, and I remember being so worried that we couldn't put the cookies out right away because people would leave their seats during the... go back and sneak a cookie.
All those you use.
It was the most beautiful. I said, I have got to call the courier because it was the most beautiful with the candlelight and then the candelabra and the reflection and the little choir walking with the candles and in their choir robes. It was, excuse the expression, pretty high church to me.
It was our most high church.
Church of all. Well, see, we started going in between, so we were not aware of this, and so it was the first one. And
you didn't know how diverse we really were.
I remember Al Rosen asked me if I wanted to pour a punch, and I go, okay. And so that was my first job. So well, let's see, do you all have anything you'd like to add? I think we've just about covered the high points. There's so much.
Yeah, there is.
So actually, we skipped over my background.
Yes, we did. Really. I'm sorry.
And the other thing that I think needs attention is the Partner Church Council.
Yes. The Partner Church. Oh, I forgot. Oh, I didn't mention.
Because the church
was
really,
yes,
was really very influential in terms of the development of the Partner Church Council, simply because we were one of the, well, I was one of the founders of it at the Charlotte General Assembly. I went, and eventually people from the church went earlier than many other churches did and set some of the parameters, some of the approaches of how to do things.
So you, by saying you went and set up the parameters, was this at a meeting in the States, or did you literally go, did you set this up by going to Transylvania, or both?
It was at the Charlotte Convention, GA, that we first organized, kind of informally.
All right.
And it's a very long and complicated story that we don't need to go into. But we had visitors from the church and visitors from Transylvania. Members of the church went to Transylvania. I was involved with I was there about 13 times.
13 times.
including meetings in the bishop's office over there. And, what's really notable, other than, again, that was a lot of work.
Well, and I think it was, and because Richard was, and he was pretty well loved and respected in Transylvania during the time he was active. And also because Beverly Moore got involved in it. She has, the church may not be that aware of it, she has continued to be very involved.
And for
on
a while, Carol Findling was, too.
They still put an entry in the annual report.
Yeah, and Beverly's worked on the kind of international UUs. And the partner church, really, the partner church council, I think, really was the UUA's, was Unitarian Universalism in the United States first coming to terms with this was really more than just a United States phenomenon.
Right.
That there's, so there's now partner churches, the Philippines, Transylvania, Africa. It's become, it was a beginning of international UUism. Mm-hmm. Even though there was some stuff in there before, it was a little bit more organized and respected and aware, people became more aware of it. So. I think the fact that the church supported Richard in this, you know, because it was an activity that he did that was not specifically
for the
church's benefit.
Well, I think it was, again, as a new member, it was important to me because it explained it did exactly what you just said. It was beyond the United States. And it also explains the painting on the wall.
Ah, yes. That, incidentally, I want this to be recorded for all time. That painting belongs to me. It was a gift to me when I was in Transylvania. But Ann Cottle gave the money for the frame that it's in.
Okay.
So I didn't, when I left the church, I didn't want to leave an empty frame on the wall. But it's still mine.
It's your, okay, duly noted. And then we did have a church service last year about it and about him.
Servetus is a Spaniard.
Okay.
David Ferenc is the Hungarian.
Okay. Well, that's, we had a service about that. So I think that's really important too. So. What else did I forget to mention, or anything else you wanted to stress, or?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you're going to get a lot of the RE from Anne, because I think that was a strength of the church for a long time, and became a strength, especially when then Lisa Wilner began there.
Right.
So.
Lisa, who told me to tell you all hi, by the way.
Likewise. You can tell her, I listened to her singing with the soul singers. It was great.
So. Yeah.
Joan suggested that I ask Lisa about becoming an RE director. And I did the actual persuading of her, which wasn't too difficult to do because it, for whatever reason, it appealed to her. Mm-hmm. And she has been just... she's not there anymore, is she?
No.
She was just magnificent, RE director.
Yeah, she's now on the Board of Education.
Yeah.
Yeah, elected position, her first term.
She still comes occasionally.
She comes occasionally. Oh, yeah,
John,
she does.
John, her husband, comes.
He comes regularly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, if there isn't anything else...
we'll send you telegrams and
emails
and all the things we forgot.
The subject line, something else I forgot to mention. Yeah, it's fine. Well, I thank you very much. And
I bet we've gone over our time.
It goes on for a long time. It can go on. So thank you, Richard and Joan. And Joe Kramer, that voice that was not identified at first.
Well, thank you. This was really fun.
Right.
Well, thank you.